Michael Casey, lots to talk about in films, both streaming, virtual, and in person. Let's start with Deep Water.
Yeah, let's start here because this is an interesting one. This is released by 20th Century Studios, which is actually Disney these days. And the movie was supposed to come out in theaters, but because of the really low box office performance of like West Side Story, I think Disney's pulling a lot of their adult non-superhero movies from the theaters and putting them onto their streaming services. So instead of coming out in theaters, Deep Water will be playing Hulu as of today. And actually, this is the perfect fit for this movie because this is a very kind of schlocky, preposterous thriller. It's not even really a thriller because there's no real suspense to this movie. It's probably more funny than anything else, but they're definitely billing it as an erotic thriller from director Adrian Lin. You may know him from, he did the version of Lolita from about 2 decades ago and Unfaithful and Fatal Attraction. And we're definitely in this very similar milieu here. Our main character is Vic Van Allen. He's played by Ben Affleck. And Vic is a filthy rich software developer who he came up with the chips that go in drones so that they can strike their target with greater accuracy. And apparently he made millions because now he's retired in his 40s and living in this very stately manner in New Orleans with his wife, Melinda, and their six-year-old daughter. Now his wife, Melinda, is played by Ana de Armas. And I don't know the backstory because we don't get into it in the movie, but she has grown completely and totally bored with him. And so she's now bringing boyfriends over to the house, and she has been for years. And she's not so much some people have affairs and they have, they're on the sly. She's broadcasting this so loudly that even Vic's friends are starting to feel emasculated. And there's some dynamic you could say between the two of them, between Vic and Melinda, but make no mistake, this script gets nowhere even close to the interiority of these characters. Who knows what their motivation is behind him, because none of that matters, because what really matters here is that Ben Affleck is having a lot of fun with this character. He is playing a guy who is, when he is quiet and still, he looks as big as a tree and about as dense. But when he starts talking, he's got that Ben Affleck charm, that real smart aleckness to him. So when he meets one of the boyfriends, the flavor of the month, they start casually talking about previous boyfriends Melinda's had. And that's when he lets them know that the woman went missing because the character killed him. So you don't have any of like building suspense of like, is this a bad guy? Is this a good guy? You know exactly where you stand with this movie. What works for this movie is Affleck, because he leans so much into the silliness of it. And I think the silliness of it really kind of motivated director Lin's, like, he leans into the preposterity of this movie because it really waffles back and forth and you're just not 100% sure how intentional the tone of this movie is or how amateurish it looks from time to time. There's definitely a lot of questions. There's a lot of questions of why are Vic and Melinda still in this relationship after 6 years? Why does Vic keep snails in the backyard? Why do people behave around these two characters the way they do? It doesn't matter. None of that matters. This is a fun movie. About 30 minutes into watching this, I paused it because I had to go and pop some popcorn. Not really because I was hungry, but because a movie like this just demands buttery popcorn. I wish it was maybe a little bit trashier of a film. You know what? You take what you can get. This one's really silly and it's really enjoyable. It's a perfect movie to watch in the middle of the day on your couch when you just can't find nothing else. That is Deep Water, and that is available now on Hulu.
Well, let's go ahead and switch gears here. Now out on Blu-ray is a new edition of Martin Scorsese's 1978 documentary, The Last Waltz.
Yeah, this was made at a period of Martin Scorsese's life where he was just really, was rolling with it. I mean, Taxi Driver gave him a lot of success. Mean Streets gave him a lot of success. Alice Doesn't Live Here. He segued that into a big passion project, which was a full-blown musical called New York, New York. And at the same time, one of his friends-ish, an acquaintance, if you will, Robbie Robertson, who is the lead singer and guitarist of the musical group The Band, wanted to put together a concert. They were going to say goodbye. The band was saying goodbye to the road, and they wanted to put it on tape. They wanted to capture it in some way, shape, or form, because the people they were going to invite to play with them on this concert, whether it was like Bob Dylan or Van Morrison or Neil Diamond or Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, it goes on and on and on, was such a momentous moment that they felt that there should be some sort of preservation involved. So they call it Martin Scorsese because he has a deep connection with rock and roll music in his movies. And they figured if anyone's going to do it, let's get Marty. And so Scorsese, decides that if they're going to capture this, they need to capture it right. It's not going to just be on tape. It's not just going to be on 16 millimeter. It's going to be on 35 millimeter. And they're going to have 9 cinematographers come, and each cinematographer is going to operate a camera. And they're going to go ahead and they're going to block out every song. Robbie Robertson gave Scorsese the set list and the lyrics so that he could break them down and basically make this massive composed film where if a person was going into a solo, they could go ahead and they could light the person with the spotlight and they could have the right camera at the right angle with the right lens on it on that performer so that when you piece it all together, it's like you're actually in the audience yourself. You're not going to see a whole lot of shots of the audience. You're just going to see the performers. And frankly, the results are absolutely stunning. This might be one of my favorite things that Scorsese has ever made. I think it might be one of his most successful things. It's certainly his most joyous movie he's ever made, because this is just the love for the music, the love for performance, the love of being there, the energy of it. And this concert that the band put on, their final concert, well, at the time it was their final concert, was a 7-hour affair. It was in San Francisco, and it was on Thanksgiving. So they actually had a Thanksgiving meal to everyone in the audience. They had a orchestra come out and play a waltz. That's where the title, The Last Waltz, comes from. And then they come out and take the stage, and then they invite all these guests out. And the audience loved it so much that they wouldn't leave. So then everyone comes back out and they have a jam session and they play more music and they just go on and on and on. And what's really just comes through so much when you're watching this thing is the excess. The excess of the 70s, the excess of this music, the excess of these performers and these solos, the excess of Scorsese and of cinema. Why not just have one camera when you can have 9, and not just have camera operators, but have like the greatest cinematographers of the time, and have Boris Levin, who did the sets for West Side Story and Sound of Music, have him design the stage. I mean, it is so over the top, and it is so wonderful. It's this wonderful, great send up to the music, to cinema, to entertainment, to what kind of draws people together. I love it. I've seen this movie many times, and every time I watch it, I just get goosebumps. It's so good. It is going to be out on March 22nd on 4K UHD and Blu-ray from the Criterion Collection. It has all kinds of bells and whistles on it, interviews, and more music than you can possibly shake a stick at. It is great. I say check that one out.
And finally, screening in person at the Lyric in Fort Collins is Ron.
Yeah, they're doing a 5-part Akira Kurosawa retrospective, and this is going to be the 4th movie. This is going to be on the 22nd up there in Fort Collins. And Ron, I mean, Kurosawa is a Japanese filmmaker that started in the 40s and went all the way up into the 80s. And he was just a master filmmaker of master filmmakers. Seven Samurai, Rashomon, The Hidden Fortress. Ron is outstanding. It is his adaptation of King Lear. It is made in color. It is made in a color that you cannot imagine that they still make movies in, where everything is color-coded, so that when you're watching these warring armies go, each soldier has a banner on them, and they are color-coded so that you know exactly what's going on. You understand the geography of the landscape, the battle between them. This is an epic kind of movie where the players involved all have their motivations, and you understand their motivations, and you really kind of identify with them, regardless of what side of the fence that they're standing on. Like you empathize. And that's something Kurosawa is really great at, not just action and where to place the camera, but also to get you to get the audience on the side of both hero and villain in a way that was neither talking down to anyone or being didactic. This is a stunning film. To see this on the big screen is a treat you do not want to miss. Like I said, that's going to be at the Lyric Theater on March 22nd. You do not want to miss Ron.
Well, Michael Casey, for more information about you and for your reviews, where can people go?
Go to boulderweekly.com online worldwide, or if you're in Boulder County, go ahead and pick up the paper this week. There's more on Deepwater. Next week, there'll be more on The Last Waltz, and we are coming up to Oscar season. And if you want to get more Oscar goodies, you go to michaeljcinema.com, because we got lots of stuff coming up for the next 2 weeks.